Esther is one of my favorite books in the Bible, mostly because it's not a very long book, it's very easy to read, and the story is so compelling that sometimes when I'm looking up a passage and I happen to hit one in Esther, I start reading the context and before I know it I'm caught up in the plot and I end up finishing the book. It's that compelling of a story. Esther centers around four main characters. There's Ahasuerus. He's the king of Persia, the Persian Empire. Not a small place, a very large empire. Esther, who is also called Hadassah, is a Jewish maiden. She becomes queen of Persia, in part due to her great beauty. There's also mention of Mordecai, and Mordecai is Esther's cousin, who had raised her from childhood after her parents had died. And he becomes noticed by the king when he discovered and foiled a plot to kill the king. He foiled an assassination plot and so therefore became noticed by the king. And Haman is also mentioned. He's an up-and-coming man, a political person who was recently promoted to chief of all the king's governors. Or as they had called them in the Persian Empire, they were princes. You know, they weren't actually, we often think of princes as somebody who is hereditarily related to the king. That's not in their case. The princes refer to the governors, basically seconds in command. We are going to start, though, in the book of Esther in chapter 3. Don't have time to go through the whole book of Esther, even though it is a short book. But we're going to start and focus on the story of Haman. In Esther chapter 3, starting with verse 1, after these events, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and established his authority over all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage. Then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why are you transgressing the king's command?" Now it was when they had spoken daily to him, and he would not listen to them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's reason would stand. For he had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would neither bow down nor pay homage to him, Haman was filled with rage. Unlike all others, the king had commanded that Haman be bowed down to him, be given homage for his position. Unlike the others, Mordecai refused. As Haman moved through the streets, Mordecai did not bow down. And when Haman sent men to find out why, Mordecai simply told them that it was because he was a Jew. Now, perhaps it was because Mordecai saw that the homage was too close to worship and refused to do so. We're not really told. Or perhaps it was because Mordecai knew something of the character of Haman and would not show respect that he did not feel was deserving. We don't know exactly which way it is. Hold your finger here and turn over to Proverbs 12. Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 8. Proverbs 12 verse 8, a man will be praised according to his insight, but one of perverse mind will be despised. In other words, basically it's when a man deserves praise, that's great. But if he's not deserving of it, it ought not to be given. And perhaps that's the way Mordecai felt. But notice that Haman became furious at Mordecai. But not just with Mordecai. Because Mordecai said he would not bow down because he was a Jew. Therefore, Haman reasoned that all Jews were troubled. And Haman then proceeded to plot to wipe out all the Jews from the Persian Empire. All because one man, at least from Haman's point of view, slighted him. Starting in verse 8 of Esther chapter 3, it says, "Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, 'There is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of all other people, and they do not observe the king's laws. So it is not in the king's interest to let them remain. If it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who carry on the king's business and to put into the king's treasuries.'" So Haman basically goes up to the king and says, "Hey, there's a rebellious people among us. They follow their own laws. They don't follow what we say. And they really need to be removed." And he even offers to pay the expenses of those who are going to remove these people. The king does agree, but he tells Haman, "You don't have to pay for it. We'll take that out of the treasury." But rather than be bothered with the details, the king gives Haman his signet ring to use on the orders. Now we have to understand what that signifies, because a king's ring or signet ring was basically the way signatures were signed. So basically what the king has done is give Haman a blank check. He signed the document, nothing has been written yet, but he already gave Haman the permission to sign the document on his behalf. Haman was able then to write anything he wanted. So an order went out that in 11 months from then, which is the last month of the year, all Jews were to be killed. Several mistakes this king made. Not only did he just give Haman a blank check to do whatever he wanted to, you know, Haman never said what people it was involved in. He just said there was a rebellious people. He never checked to see what Haman was even saying was right, who he was talking about, or anything. Mordecai manages, though, to tell Esther of the plot and pleads that she intervene on behalf of her people. However, Esther hesitates because the law did not allow for anyone, even the queen, to walk in before the king uninvited. In fact, it's been a month since she's last seen the king. But Mordecai gives a significant warning to Esther, and it's found in Esther chapter 4, starting with verse 13. "Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, 'Do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not obtained royalty for such a time as this.'" Mordecai is absolutely positive the Jews would survive even Haman's plot. He basically tells Esther, though, "Are you going to be a part of the salvation, or are you going to stand aside? God's going to save the Jews. The question is whether you're going to be saved, whether you take action or not." And he points out that probably that's the reason why she ended up being queen. Now, it's not common for a young lady who's, you know, an orphan, growing up in a foreign country, suddenly to find herself queen of a large empire. That's just not your typical thing that would happen to most people. Well, we have fairy tales, you know, the kids would like to read and things like that, but that's not the way life works. He said, maybe you're here for a reason. Maybe God put you here for a reason. And this might be that reason. Well, as we read on, Esther relents. She says she will see the king, even if it means her life. And as she prepares, she asks the Jews to fast and pray for 3 days that the Lord may grant her success. And Esther did appear before the king, and he accepts her prayers. Now, one of the things that probably the reason for this law is, again, remember, there was at least one assassination attempt against the king. Here's one way to take care of that problem. Nobody can appear unannounced. Nobody can appear without us being on the schedule, basically. It was probably for the safety of the king. But Esther appeared before the king. He uses a scepter, acknowledge her. And he perceives that she's troubled. And again, you can see where he's a man who doesn't think things through, but he offers her anything up that she desires, up to half his kingdom. Yet all she asks for is the privilege of having the king and Haman over for a dinner party. Not much to ask, not much to grant. So at that dinner, he asks again what's troubling her. And again offers anything up to half his kingdom. And again, all she asks is if the king and Haman would come to dinner the next day. And then she would tell the king what was troubling her. Now, Haman's on the top of the world. Not only is he chief of the princes, but he's received not one, but two dinner invitations, private dinner invitations, with the king and queen. But on his way out from the first dinner, he sees Mordecai at the gate. In Esther chapter 5, and starting with verse 9, then Haman went out that day, glad and pleased of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand up or tremble before him, Haman was filled with anger against Mordecai. Haman controlled himself, however, went to his house, and sent for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman recounted to them the glory of his riches and the number of his sons, and every instance where the king had magnified him, and how he had promised him above the princes and servants of the king. And Haman also said, even Esther the queen, let no one but me come with the king to the banquet which he had prepared, and tomorrow also I am invited by her with the king. Yet all of this does not satisfy me every time I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Can you imagine? He recounts, look at all the things I have. Look at all the greatness I've achieved. And just because one man refuses to bow to him, it ruins everything. And verse 14 then says, his wife and all his friends said to him, have a gallows 50 cubits high made, and in the morning ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on it, then go joyfully with the king to the banquet. And the advice pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Now that very night, the king had trouble sleeping, so he had the records of the kingdom read to him. Perhaps he thought they were going to be so boring that they would put him to sleep. I know I would if I had to read the records of everything that went on. The account of Mordecai saving the king was read, and the king asked how Mordecai was rewarded, because he couldn't remember. He was embarrassed to learn that nothing had been done for Mordecai. Oversight. So he sent for the first prince who could be found to help him plan a suitable reward. Well, the first prince that just happened to be found turned out to be Haman, who was coming to seek permission to hang Mordecai on the gallows. And in Esther chapter 6, starting with verse 6, so Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" And Haman said to himself, "Who would the king desire to honor more than me?" Then Haman said to the king, "For the man whom the king desires to honor, let them bring a royal robe with the king, which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed. And let the robe and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble princes, and let them array the man whom the king desires to honor, and lead him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king desires to honor.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Take quickly the robe and the horse, as you have said, and go, do so for Mordecai the Jew, who is sitting at the king's gate. Do not fall short in anything of all that you have said." Ooh, that must have hurt. He was on his way to ask for Mordecai to be hung. He was just given an assignment to give Mordecai honor. How embarrassing. And instead of seeing Mordecai hung, Haman personally parades him through the streets in honor. He has barely time to recover from this awful instance, from his point of view, before it's time for the banquet with the queen. And here Esther finally tells the king what is troubling her. In Esther chapter 7, starting with verse 3. "Then Queen Esther answered and said, 'If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as my petition, and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Now if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commiserate with the annoyance to the king.' Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, 'Who is he and where is he who presumed to do this?' And Esther said, 'A foe and an enemy is this wicked Haman.' Then Haman became terrified before the king and queen." I don't know if Haman realized that Esther was a Jew, or even thought about it when he wrote out that law. But now he's been exposed to writing a law that basically would be issued in the king's name to kill the queen. Obviously the king is upset with this turn of events. The king's so angry, he storms out into the palace gardens. He didn't even trust himself to speak. Just stormed right out. Meanwhile, Haman realizes that Esther held his life in her hands. And he stays behind to plead with Esther. We're not told why, but he must have had too much to drink. Because in his pleading, he somehow manages to stumble and falls right on top of Esther, just as the king walks back in from the gardens. Starting with verse 8, Esther 7, verse 8. "Now when the king returned from the palace garden into the place where they had been drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. Then the king said, 'Will he even assault the queen with me in the house?' As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, 'Behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king.' And the king said, 'Hang him on it.' So they hanged Haman on the gallows which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided." Mordecai is then promoted to replace Haman. And Haman's plot to kill the Jews is foiled. Now they did have a little bit of trouble because the Persians had an interesting law. their law did not allow for any prior made law to be rescinded. You couldn't just cancel a law. Probably in their way of thinking, if you understood that a law was permanent, you would take more thought about putting a law in place. Obviously, this king didn't do much in the way of thinking. But they could add to laws. So a law went out allowing the Jews to defend themselves without retribution. He couldn't rescind a law saying that people could kill Jews, but he could say, okay, Jews, you can defend yourself and nobody's going to come after you. And of course, the Jews then triumphed over their enemies. We need to pay attention to some of the lessons that are here in Esther. See, Haman's pride is what brought him low. Over in Proverbs chapter 29, Proverbs 29 and verse 23. Proverbs 29 and in verse 23, a man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor. Here's where the problem really lies, is Haman's pride. He had so much pride of all the things that he accomplished. But it brought him low. He could not do things that softened his own pride. He could not bring himself to act humbly. When Mary gave praise to God, there's a song that's recorded for us in Luke chapter 1. And perhaps Mary had this in mind, we don't know exactly. But in Luke chapter 1 and verse 51, Luke chapter 1 and in verse 51, it says, he has done mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who were proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He brought down rulers from their thrones and exalted those who were humble. This is not the only instance that God has done this. But God has done this many times. See, Haman took offense when none was given. He sought vengeance for what he imagined was wrongs. The only problem that ever occurred was that the fact that Mordecai didn't bow to him. Remember, Persia is a huge empire. Haman had thousands of people bowing and scraping to him wherever he went. There's just one man that said, no, I can't. And that just ruined his day. Eventually it ruined his life. See, from childhood, young kids oftentimes come up with this idea, well, if you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. And almost always, when they try doing that, they never do exactly what they got hurt by. They always try for something harder on the way back. In Romans chapter 12, and in verse 17, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. You cannot fix a wrong with another wrong. Most people try to fix a wrong with a greater wrong. In 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 9, First Peter 3, verse 9, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, for you were called for this very purpose, that you might inherit a blessing. And probably the hardest thing people have is stifling this urge for revenge. Take a look at Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19 and verse 18. You shall not take revenge or vengeance. You shall bear any grudge against the sons of your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Now I'm going to talk about the last part of that verse. But the first part of it says, do not take vengeance. That's the opposite of love your neighbor as yourself. There's another story that we're going to look at real quickly. When the king of Armenia wanted to capture Elisha, God struck his army with blindness. Take a look at 2 Kings chapter 6. 2 Kings chapter 6, starting with verse 18. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, strike this people with blindness, I pray. And so he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Then Elisha said to them, this is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek. And he brought them to Samaria. And it came about, when they had come to Samaria, that Elisha said, O Lord, open the eyes of these men, that they may see. So the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. Then the king of Israel said to them, when he saw them, and to Elisha, my father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them? And he answered, you shall not kill them. Would you kill those who you have taken captive with your sword and with your bow? Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink, and go to their master. So he prepared a great feast for them, and when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master, and the marauding bands of the Armenians did not come again to the land of Israel. Isn't that interesting? They came here to wipe out Israel. The king of Samaria was just ready to wipe them out. He had them in his clutches. And Elisha said, no. Give them dinner. Send them on their way. That is what God has always taught. That is what God wants. Not to take vengeance, but to do good instead. Disciples had to learn that lesson as well. In Luke chapter 9, and in verse 51, Luke chapter 9, verse 51, and it came about when the days were approaching for his ascension, they resolutely set his face to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers on ahead of him, and they went and entered a village of the Samaritans to make an arrangements for him. And they did not receive him, because he was journeying with his face toward Jerusalem. And when his disciples James and John saw that, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them? But he turned and rebuked them and said, you do not know what kind of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. Isn't that the way most of us react? Somebody slights us. Somebody seems like they're going to do us harm. The first thing we want to do is strike right back. Not with the same force, but we're going to strike twice as hard so they won't come back. God tells us we need to do kindness instead. The other thing we see with Esther is that Haman spread his hatred not to just Mordecai, but he expanded it to the people that were perfectly innocent of the matter. God's people have always been attacked. We find that happening all the time. Christians are persecuted. We read that in Revelation. We read it through the scriptures. God's people have always been put under pressure and attacked for just being good people. But you know, God will overcome. Over in Psalms 83, Psalm 83, I'm going to read starting with verse 1. Psalm 83, starting with verse 1. O God, do not remain quiet. Do not be silent. And O God, do not be still. For behold, thine enemies have made an uproar. And those who hate thee have exalted themselves. They make shrewd plans against thy people and conspire together against thy treasured ones. They have said, come and let us wipe them out as a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. For they have conspired together with one mind, against thee they do make a covenant. And jumping down to verse 13, O my God, make them like the whirling dust, like the chaff before the wind, like fire that burns the forest, and like a flame that sets the mountain on fire. So pursue them with thy tempest, and terrify them with thy storm. Fill their face with dishonor, that they may seek thy name, O Lord. Let them be ashamed and dismayed forever, and let them be humiliated and perish, that they may know that thou alone, whose name is the Lord, art the most high over all the earth. God overcome, in hopes that they might seek you. And if they won't, that they might perish. Not taking personal vengeance, but calling on the judge of all judges to execute sentence against them. Haman, we also learned, just could not let his hatred go. It irritated him day after day. You know, we're not told exactly how long, but it probably was several months. Although this going on, that just Haman just couldn't stand it. And even when he had plotted for the Jews' demise, he couldn't wait for Mordecai to be killed. He had to plan it out that he was going to kill himself on the gallows. In Proverbs 25, starting with verse 8, Proverbs 25, starting with verse 8. Do not go out hastily to argue your case. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor puts you to shame? Argue your case with your neighbor and do not reveal the secret of another, lest he who hears it reproach you and evil report about you not pass away. Some people are so focused on harming their imagined enemies, they cannot see the harm they are doing to themselves. Because harm that's intended for someone else almost always backfires. The advice here that Solomon gives is to settle it privately, instead of him bringing others into the problem, because when it backfires, at least it's only between you and him and not other people seeing it as well. Similar advice is found in Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, starting with verse 25. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And do not give the devil an opportunity. The longer we hold anger, mask it under lies, the longer we give Satan an opportunity to trip us up and bring us down. And finally, the lesson that we can learn from here is that the Lord knows how to keep his people. Over in 2 Peter chapter 2, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. 2 Peter chapter 2 verse 9. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and how to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment, God knows our problems. God knows how to preserve us. We're so busy trying to defend ourselves, to protect ourselves. God says He'll take care of the problems. As we talked about in our class on Sunday morning, all things can be manipulated by God. And in Romans chapter 8, and in verse 28, Romans 8, verse 28, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good of those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. God can make everything work out right for His people. And God does that. It's interesting when you read the context of it, the type of things that Paul has in mind is persecution, swords, famines, perils. God can take even the worst things that life throws and make them work out. Over in 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting with verse 10. 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting with verse 10. But you follow my teaching, conduct, purpose, faith, patience, love, and perseverance, persecutions and sufferings, such as has happened to me at Antioch, at Iconium, and at Lystra, what persecutions I endured, and out of them all the Lord delivered me. And indeed, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. But evil men and impostors will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. You, however, continue in the things you have learned and become convinced of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the sacred writings, which are able to give you the wisdom that leads to salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. That's interesting. Paul tells Timothy, follow my example. And he starts out with all these wonderful ideas. But right at the, as he keeps going into it, he starts saying persecutions and sufferings. Follow my example. Godly people will be persecuted. The wicked will get worse. That's their nature. However, we have to remain faithful. And God will care for us. I hope you'll think about these things this evening. As we always do when we're gathered together, we like to offer an opportunity. If there's anyone here who wishes to become a child of God, there is no better time than right now to put on Christ. Start doing God's will. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, we'd like the prayers of the brethren on the behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song, the selectors.